All right, guys, in the spirit of the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view this Sunday, tonight we're going to be looking at one of the biggest Hell in a Cell matches of all time, that being the Armageddon 2000 six-man Hell in a Cell match that saw Kurt Angle, Triple H, The Undertaker, Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, and Rikishi collide in one of the biggest matches of all time in Hell in a Cell. So this one's going to be a ton of fun. Let's get it all started right now.
It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era to the Reality Era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is, it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
All right, everybody, let's get rolling on this wrestling nostalgia night. Just days away, a few days away from the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view that's coming to you again on Sunday night from the WWE Network. But tonight, we're going back in time. In fact, we're going back 20 years. 20 years! 20 years to Armageddon 2000. It's unbelievable that 2000 was 20 years ago. Two decades ago was 2000. It's really mind-blowing. And so we're going to go back to that time, and I just got through watching this match and some of the other things that happened on this pay-per-view, and I've got a lot of things to say. This is the fun time of the week where you don't hear a ton of ranting outside of the voicemails that may trigger me, and we'll get to the voicemails in just a moment as well, because I like to start them at the top of the show. But it's a fun time, right? Because you just get to kind of, you get to let loose. And you get to forget about any of the woes going on in the current product, maybe the woes going on in your life, and bring you back to a time that you loved. I mean, let's be honest. It's a time that I think we all universally loved in the Attitude Era. Ruthless Aggression followed by a close second. It also depends on when you started watching wrestling, whether or not you have fond memories of the Attitude Era / Ruthless Aggression era. But maybe you're also seeing this for the first time or hearing about this for the first time, and that's cool too. You know, maybe we're introducing you to this stuff for the first time, and that is also a really cool thing. So I always like to give moments that I loved outside of the Katie Vick thing last week. Most of the time it is things and are things that I love, and I think you guys will too. So we're venturing back 20 freaking years to December 10th. 2000. I want to say 2020. No, it's 2000. And this took place in Birmingham, Alabama at the Birmingham Jefferson Civic Center. 14,920 people in attendance. And this pay-per-view, just kind of giving you a quick open on this, and then we'll get to voicemails, is really unbelievable when you look at what this, not only the title of the pay-per-view, Armageddon, meaning the end of the world, but they actually structured their entire intro video package around actual war footage that had taken place throughout the decades. And they actually set up the stage with the demolished cars to make it kind of look like the end of the world. Imagine that in today's environment, especially in 2020. I don't know if WWE would get just demolished by people, or if they would actually kind of cling on to it and go, hey, this is kind of hilarious that they're bringing this to the forefront and making it a pay-per-view. It's not going to happen. They will never bring back Armageddon, especially not in the foreseeable future. Maybe ever. I believe the last Armageddon may have been in 2008, the final year of the Ruthless Aggression era before they went PG. So those wishing for an Armageddon, not going to happen. Cool name for a pay-per-view, though. You know, I think it is kind of edgy. It's a nice name. But they literally brought out war footage. Good God. I mean, I'm not offended by it, but What a stark contrast this was. However, really awesome to hear Jim Ross, of course, Jerry the King Lawler, best commentary team of all time. So that was nice to hear, but we'll get into all of that and more, including some other things that happen, and I'll give you the lineup for the other eight matches. There were a total of 9 matches on this card, obviously concluded with that main event of Kurt Angle, The Rock, Stone Cold, Steve Austin, Triple H, Undertaker, and Rikishi in a Hell in a Cell match. And let me just say this, how much more special did Hell in a Cell feel back then when it wasn't just a pay-per-view that was built into the schedule? How much more important did that pay-per-view feel, or did that match stipulation feel, when it wasn't just automatically a part of the pay-per-view schedule once every 12 months? Amazing, right? Amazing. When things don't happen often, how it makes you perceive how important they are. So, it made me feel like it was an important match, and it was 20 years ago. And I was getting goosebumps watching it even again 2 decades later. Sometimes wrestling, just like music, is timeless. It doesn't matter how many years pass by. It just takes you back no matter what. I mean, you can say, oh, it was forever ago, but it doesn't matter. Some things are just frozen in time. Some things are just stuck forever. It could be music. It could be a relationship. It could be a breakup. It could be, in this case, pro wrestling. It could be a sports moment. Things sometimes just never fade, even with time. People say everything fades with time. Does it really, though? I don't think that's a universal rule for everything. So I got a little deep there, but my point is that wrestling can oftentimes do that when you go back. And when you go back and watch some of the great stuff on the network or YouTube, wherever you get it, you go, oh my God, it's like a breath of fresh air. You get lost in yourself, and you get lost in the stories. You get lost in yesteryear, and you remember, hey, this was great. And you remember what you were doing at that time, or however old you were, where you were, what you were doing, that kind of thing. So it's kind of fun, and that's why I also do this. So, all right. Well, I got a few voicemails. You guys are nuts with your voicemails. I love it. So we're going to get to your voicemails starting right now.
Okay, so I just watched Raw. I'm a little peeved with New Day. They're saying now that Big E's going to be the New Day on SmackDown. They're going to be the New Day on Raw, and that they're going to keep doing New Day things. I really hope to God that that is not the case. Big E needs to do his own thing, and they need to separate him full-heartedly from the New Day so that he can be his own man. So tired of it. Everything with Seth and the Mysterios from SmackDown, just I'm tired of it. I know I've said it before, just want it to go away. I want to see Murphy beat the crap out of him and Murphy get some push, because I really like Murphy, and let's start calling him Buddy Murphy again. That's his name. Retribution is great. I believe it's Mufasa, or however you say Ali. I like where they're going with his character. I want them to go deeper with that character. I like to see what's going to happen between Retribution and The Fiend, and maybe they become one and the same. I love that Ali admitted that he was the hacker. I think that's great. That ties that all up. So there's some things they're doing good, some things they're doing horrible, like New Day and the Mysterios. And then the way they ended Raw with Randy in the ring and Drew walking in after breaking the lock, and then the show goes off the air, that's just frustrating. That's stupid. Like, you're not going to show us what actually happened in the ring? No, that's dumb. It's just dumb. And then between the two shows, between SmackDown season premiere, Raw season premiere, Raw was definitely, definitely better. What they're trying to do with SmackDown and tying in all the sports stuff is dumb. Fox needs to back off and let the WWE do their thing. Even though we don't always agree, it's at least better than what they did on SmackDown. Anyways, I'm sure I had other things to say, so I'm out. Later.
Hey, I believe that's the Waz, right? So hey, thanks for your content. A lot of stuff you packed into that voicemail. That's good. Obviously, you're maximizing your minutes. we only got 3 minutes. You guys only have 3 minutes per message. So, and if, by the way, anybody's listening and you want to chime in, 518-952-0247. That's the number. Unmanned, rings a few times, and then goes to the voicemail and talk about whatever you want. Keep it PG, rant, anything wrestling related is definitely welcome. So, okay, I'm not going to talk about every single point just for the sake of time, because I do agree with some of your, really most of your, what you said. And I think we all can say in unison two things. Number one, Big E needs to change his character. Number two, please, for the love of God, WWE, move on from the Mysterios and Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins is actually trying to distance himself from the Mysterios, and the Mysterios are the ones who are keeping this going. So, yes, I agree. We also want to see Buddy Murphy versus Seth Rollins. We all want to see that. He actually is the most relevant he's ever been in his career. Let's just call him Buddy Murphy. I agree. I can't stop. It's been a significant amount of time now that WWE has changed or chopped off his first name. And I still can't not think Buddy Murphy. It just flows. Buddy Murphy. Buddy Murphy. Right? I can't just say Murphy. I'm like, I'm missing something. So, just, I don't know why they're fighting it. They think Buddy's kind of a cute little, you know, non-manly name. Is it not masculine alpha male enough for Vince? There's got to be something wrong that he had with the name Buddy. I have no problem with it, especially as a babyface. It's kind of cool. So, yeah, Seth Rollins versus Buddy Murphy, that's what I'm interested in because of how long Seth essentially held him hostage and eventually having Murphy build up enough courage and have enough confidence in himself to turn on Seth. That's the story right here. The Mysterios, I could care less. I don't care about the Mysterios anymore. And there were times over the summer I enjoyed it. There's no question. The Eye for an Eye was a little bit over the top, as we all thought it would be. But the overall storyline was good until it just was too much, and then it was not good anymore. And then Murphy did his thing, and that's where I said, okay, now you've got me interested again. But the Mysterios need to just stop being on TV. Please. At least if they're going to be in the same ring as Seth Rollins. This is way too much. I know that I mentioned several weeks ago, like a month and a half ago, that if we can just get to Hell in a Cell, this whole thing will be over. Well, Hell in a Cell is upon us, and I think we're all at our breaking points with this program. They beat it to death, and then they resurrected it and killed it again. That's what they did. And they have a habit when WWE finds something that the fans like and maybe exceeds expectations, they take it to the nth degree and they just squeeze everything out of it until there's nothing left but a soul, and then they suck the soul out of it. That's unfortunately what they do a lot of times, to the point where it actually kind of recedes on the progress that was made by that storyline. So, But yes, Big E, I can't say this enough. I've been saying this forever, and even Corey Graves said it on air that he needs to get rid of the silliness, but he could see him being a big main event guy. He said it on air. He's acknowledging what the fans are acknowledging, and I think it's loud and clear that if what Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods said on Raw was true, that Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods are going to be the ones to represent New Day on Raw, and Big E is going to be the representation of New Day on SmackDown. Boy, that's terrible. That's terrible, as Cleveland from Family Guy would say. That's terrible. I mean, it's just awful. It is. That is a signal, that the wrong signal to send to fans that were hoping for a new Big E. And I will say this, I've said this before, I'll say it again though. As much as I want a big change in Big E, like new music, I want new outfit. For God's sakes, new outfits. I don't need the gyrating, the pancakes, the weird facials, the dancing, the hip swivels. None of that. Eventually, I want that all gone. And for his promo style to also stop being so animated like he's a walking giant cartoon. I don't need your charisma trying to force your charisma to bleed through my TV. I don't. We already know you have a lot of talent, right? Like, I don't need to see the Big E of New Day. I need to see the Big E that's Big E, whatever, you know, whatever that is. Now, again, the evolution of the character is key. I don't think it's realistic to expect this Friday night on SmackDown to see Big E 180 degrees coming down, walking down, head down in a you know, a shirt and tie, and cutting a dark promo with new music. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen, but I would like to see progress. That's what I'm looking for, is progress and Easter eggs of letting the fans know that, yes, we're acknowledging this. He's going to change. Let's give him a story that would allow him to change. So, yeah, I'm with everyone here. So thanks so much, Waz, for your feedback. And let's get to the next voicemail.
Wrestling nostalgia about John Cena and Randy Orton. Thank you.
All right. Well, short and sweet. Thank you so much for calling. Feel free to call back anytime. Yeah, John Cena and Randy Orton. I don't know how I've never done that. One of the biggest rivalries of all time. I think when people think about Randy Orton and John Cena, I think in general, most people view it as a really good program that was overdone, but really good. And it's been, I don't know how many years since these two have had a match, but it feels like even maybe it might have been 10 years, might be really 10 years since these two have had an actual match, but it still feels too soon, doesn't it? Which is why they never really went back to Randy Orton, John Cena, is because, yes, they worked really well, but it was like, it was the King Corbin versus Roman Reigns on steroids of the late Ruthless Aggression era into the PG era. So, not even into the, not really into the Ruthless Aggression, more in the PG era. That's when it really thrived. But yes, I can do one, and I think I might. It's hard to cover everything. They did so much together. They had so many big matches and moments that I don't know if I can cover everything in one show, but I'll try to at least get the big items in the show. I'll at least try to do one, yes. So thank you so much. And if anybody else had suggestions about my wrestling nostalgia topics, I do have a bunch. I know that if you sent me one, I do have it in the bag. I promise I'm not ignoring them. Send them to me at realwwepodcast@gmail.com if you have suggestions of what I should do for wrestling nostalgia. So thank you so much. Or leave a voicemail, just as you heard. So speaking of email, though, I'm going to take a break from the voicemails because I do have a couple more to get to. But I do have an email that came through. And rather than just email this individual back, I figure it's more fun to answer it on the air. So here we go. It says, "Hey, Matt, with AJ Styles' new bodyguard, is there anyone you think could be a heavy or protege to one of the women on the main roster and then turn on them / create some kind of Triple H Batista evolution tension to later create that kind of feud? In my opinion, always works. The only one I can think of that didn't have much of a payoff was Dana Brooks and Charlotte in 2016. Would love to hear your thoughts, Mimi from Connecticut." Thanks so much, Mimi, for writing into the show, and I figured I'd answer here on the air, putting myself on the spot. So first of all, Dana Brooke and Charlotte in 2016. I'll address that. I think that it could have happened for Dana Brooke. I think that they look at Dana Brooke at this point as a utility person. She's just kind of blends in with the rest of the women. She's there in a role that is there really as an enhancement role. She's never really gotten a fair shake. I know that she stood up to, I think, Ronda Rousey at one point, but then got quickly manhandled. But yeah, I think that what needs to happen is exactly what you're talking about. You're alluding to the Triple H Batista evolution tension that later created a really good program between Triple H and Batista. Really good. And here's my point. That is a good analogy because the point of stars that are already established, one of the purposes of them is to build other stars to get them established. You can't wrestle yourself, right? So I think that, yes, Charlotte could be one. I mean, she's looming out there and she could make a return at any time. I mean, the rumor is she'll make a return at the Royal Rumble. We could see her a little earlier, maybe as early as Survivor Series or maybe TLC, but there's no rush to get her back. But yes, somebody like Charlotte, somebody like Becky Lynch when she comes back, somebody even like Natalia, you would think they would have done something with her with all of her her locker room respect and her tenure in WWE. You know, the AJ Styles thing, though, I don't know what this whole bodyguard thing is. I mean, I don't. I addressed that on my Raw review. I have no clue because AJ didn't even address it. So no idea. But yes, somebody needs to be a heavy for somebody else. That's how you build stars. Not everybody needs to be a singles competitor. Now, who that could be, that's hard to say. I'm not copping out here, but I will agree with you on the general premise that there needs to be more star growth by having established stars work with girls and or women, or in men, in the men's division too. This works in both divisions. Having those women who are big stars bring in somebody that the fans may not know, but has got a good look, like you said, heavy, somebody big. Could be. Doesn't have to be. But in that general sense of getting the rub from that person week after week, helping them win. Typically, it's a heel. Typically, this is a heel duo. But yes, thanks so much, Mimi, for your question. Okay, let's get to that next voicemail.
Yes, hi. It's Tim calling from Arlington, Texas again. Just want to touch on just a couple really quick things. You was talking about Braun Strowman. Is he a heel? Isn't he a heel? Whatever. I'm going to say, or babyface, sorry. I'm going to say, according to WWE, he is a babyface again. And what I mean by according to WWE is WWE right now, as you're aware of, because you mentioned it, they have the luxury of telling us who to cheer for and who to boo by adding the cheers and the jeers and whatever that they, how they want us to fill the match. And when Braun Strowman came out, that's the first thing I noticed was it was accompanied by cheers, which tells us, cheer for this man. This is your baby face. This is who you cheer for. I noticed the same thing when Sasha Banks came out to fight Bayley after she had recovered from her injury. We heard cheers from Sasha Banks, which in the past, up until this day, anytime Sasha Banks walks out, it's boos from the fake boos. So anyway, just a couple of things I noticed. WWE is telling us right now he's a baby face. How long that'll happen, I don't know. I would consider him more just kind of neutral at the moment. I don't consider him a baby face. I don't consider him a heel anymore. So I guess he's just kind of neutral for me. For one, a baby face is not going to use dirty tricks. Anytime a baby face uses dirty tricks, such as the low blow, it makes me boo. I don't like it anymore. Asuka is a baby face now, and there was, I don't know, a few months ago she used her green mist. I was boo. You know, baby faces do not resort to dirty tricks. You just don't. It should be written somewhere. You just don't. That's the heel's job, right? But anyways, that's all about that. I was going to mention, because you were talking about AJ Styles, and if somebody would have told me before Raw that AJ Styles, they were going to give him a heater, I would have immediately thought, I'm not for this. This is going to be stupid. And instead, I was actually pleased. I was smiling during the whole part. So, and it's going to be nice to see, as long as they keep doing something with it, for us to see AJ Styles take a new, you know, a new avenue and start doing something new and fresh. As long as he stays heel. I don't like babyface AJ Styles that much. But, yeah, he, Jordan O, he did not have to sell how tall he was. He just stepped right over that top ring. A lot of times when people are trying to sell their height, they step over the top ring as an entrance, and they have to sometimes struggle to do that. And he didn't have to sell it. He just stepped right over.
Tim, thanks so much. Always good to hear from you. Always some good thoughts and introspective things and things that help me, because you're right. How we know who's babyface and heel right now should be from the crowd noise that WWE pulses into whoever comes out. That should be our telltale sign. And you're right. The cheers, now that I went back and listened, yeah, you're absolutely right. They did put in cheers for Braun Strowman. Now, how he turned babyface, well, no, we don't know. Just because, what, he's not going against anybody that we love. At the same time, he faced Keith Lee, who you could argue is a more established babyface right now than Braun Strowman is. Not a more established star, but a more established role as a babyface. And, like you said, he used his head to go south of the border with Keith Lee. Not after Keith Lee did it to him, but in the first instance. And Keith Lee retaliated because he's a babyface and it's tit for tat. If the heel does it to you, it's just, it's getting even for the babyface. But Braun Strowman did it first. So how was that a baby? How was that a babyface move, like you said? So you're telling me we're supposed to cheer this guy by pumping in cheers. And then he acts like a heel throughout the match. Like you said, well, what the hell is he? Like, what is he? Does WWE even know what a babyface and heel are anymore? Like, what makes up a heel and babyface? It's not hard. It's not hard. It really isn't. People think that they'll cheer the babyface, or they'll cheer the heel, and they'll boo the babyface because it's just about being rebellious. Nonsense. That is an excuse, and that's a train of thought from people in WWE that want to alleviate themselves of the responsibility of coming up with a story that has a successful babyface and a successful heel. That is a reflection on creative for not understanding. And Vince, really, because he's the one approving all this. It's a reflection on Vince and creative to not understand what makes people cheer and what makes people boo people, boo certain characters at times. Not all the time. I'm not saying they're completely inept. It's not 100% fail rate, but certainly there have been massive examples. And I just don't understand this with Braun Strowman. Like you said, for me, he's a tweener. I don't know what he is right now. I just know he's a big star and a big man. He likes to talk like a monster. Like, that's all I know. That's it for right now. We don't know what else is going on inside his head, and he doesn't have Raw Underground as an outlet anymore. So, hey, we don't know, but I guess we will find out. And same with AJ Styles, big man. Like I said, I mean, he's a heater, and I liked the look of it. I like the aesthetic of how AJ Styles looks next to this man. Huge dude. Huge man. And I'm very interested to see where this goes. And AJ Styles certainly needed to shake things up. He was feeling as super, super stale as stale could be. And that's crazy for a star level, a big star like AJ Styles to feel super stale. He did. So hopefully this, whatever this is or wherever this goes, not only helps the Jordan, but also helps AJ Styles himself. So, okay, here comes the final voicemail.
Oh, hey, Matt, it's Devin from Australia again. Just my thoughts on Raw this past week. I thought that The Fiend being kind of put in, and Alexa Bliss put in that storyline between Retribution and the Hurt Business, I didn't think that made much sense at all. I didn't think that was the best way of introducing The Fiend and Alexa Bliss to Raw. I thought what I was kind of hoping for was that after the Oscar Lana match, maybe, you know, the lights could have turned off and maybe just Alexa Bliss made her appearance, you know, maybe like upside down in the corner of the ring, like when they turn their bodies and face the opponent upside down, and maybe just create something there and then turn the lights off and she's gone. I thought that would have been a great way to maybe introduce her into the women's title fight, because there was nothing for Alexa Bliss to do with the Retribution slash and the Hurt Business angle. I thought that was quite disappointing. Again, I think creative, when they hire someone for creative, they must just say, hey, here, you know how to type on a keyboard and you can type words? Don't have to make any sense of it. Just type something and press enter and we'll run with that. Because I didn't think it made any sense. Anyway, then I think on that aspect, then the Hurt Business beat Retribution, and then after that, The Fiend came back and Alexa Bliss and defeated Retribution. So Retribution basically got their ass handed to themselves twice in a few minutes, and then after that, Mustafa Ali comes up with his reason about how they're going to raise hell and how they're not going to take any prisoners. They just got beaten up. So automatically, I was like, well, I don't believe you, because you've just got beaten up again. And then a few minutes later, you got beaten up again. So, yeah, frustrating. But anyway, on a positive note, I think I hope they do that thing with Alexa Bliss. My idea, anyway. Not that I think I've got many great ideas, but I think that could be a great way to introduce her into the title fight. Anyway, great show, and looking forward to your show with the Botch Guy. That's always a great listen. And thanks again for the great show, mate. Take care. Bye.
Devin, really good to hear from you. I think it was Devin. If it's Kevin, I apologize. I'm like 90% sure I heard Devin, but all the way from Australia. Awesome. Cheers, man. So I should say cheers, mate, I believe. That's how they – I got to speak the lingo, right, or at least pretend to, all the way from New York State, right? So, okay. So first of all, yeah, the Botch Guy, number one. I'm really looking forward to that show too. It's coming to you guys Sunday night. We've come to a date immediately following the pay-per-view if you're up that late. I don't know. Depending on what time zone you're in, by the way, we will be doing a live – well, we'll be recording it live, and then it'll be posting out sometime probably around midnight or so following the pay-per-view. So if you're in the West Coast time zone, guess what? You might be up in time to listen to it. If not, you'll get it immediately the next morning on your device. So thank you so much for that. And okay, onto your content. Yeah, I have ranted – almost to exhaustion about Retribution in the storyline. And the whole logic behind how they even got contracts is it's beyond comprehension. And I've already dissected that and destroyed it. And I stand by that 2,000%. But now, okay, you've got them in a match. One of their first big match, they lose. They lose. And then the Fiend single-handedly destroys them. What? Yes, we got the really good promo from Mustafa Ali. That was a highlight to me of the night, was Mustafa Ali. And I was hoping it would be, and it was. So I'm looking forward to more from Mustafa Ali, who may single-handedly save the Retribution storyline. At least from being a complete dumpster fire. And maybe it'll be just like a bucket fire. Right? There won't be an entire dumpster. Maybe like a trash can fire. So at this point, we're really lowering the bar of expectation because of just how much flawed reasoning and logic we have to get to the point we're at. But, yes, they get destroyed in their first big match on Raw. Like, what the hell? I don't understand. Yeah, like, the Fiend took him out. Okay, that's it. And then, yeah, Mustafa Ali got a little bit of heat back and actually, as I said, added to the show. That was definitely a high point. It really was, even though it seemed like it was backwards. Shouldn't that promo have come before the match? I mean, I'm just saying. It seemed like it was pre-recorded, but then they aired it at the wrong time slot. They were like, oh, guys, is this supposed to go before or after? I don't know. Just put it after. No, wrong. It should have been before the match. But I guess on the positive side is even though they got their ass handed to them twice, it did get a little bit of heat back for them. And we did get to understand a little bit more about Mustafa Ali. Again, I'm interested in what he has to say right now. And we're seeing a nice side of him that's not just the happy-go-lucky babyface, happy to be here, and I'm going to be a good little soldier and just kind of not ruffle feathers. No, no, no. That's not what Mustafa Ali has said that he is here for. So, yeah, thanks so much, Devin, for calling in. Anytime you want to call and leave a message, more than welcome to. So thank you. And thanks to all the callers and the email we got. If you want to participate, you can email us at realwwpodcast@gmail.com. Or, again, you can call us at 518-952-0247. Just leave a voicemail. Alrighty. Let's jump into wrestling nostalgia here. Let's jump into Armageddon 2000. Again, this was in Birmingham, Alabama. What other cards or what other matches were on this card? It started with Scotty Too Hotty with Grandmaster Sexay. Defeated D'Lo Brown with Chaz and Tiger Ali Singh in a singles match. Second, the Radicals that included Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero, one of my favorite of all time, Perry Saturn with Terry, defeated Team Extreme, Jeff Hardy, Matt Hardy, and Lita in an intergender elimination tag team match. That's, by the way, for those that are not privy to the lingo or the language of how when men and women are in the same match works, there are two kinds. There's the intergender, and then there's the mixed tag. Intergender means that the men and women can mix it up. It mixed means that the men have to compete with the men, and the women have to compete with the women. Although we all know that that's not the case, because the women are allowed to slap and kick the men, whereas the men can't retaliate, which is just bizarre to me in a true competition. Nonetheless, intergender tells you what era we're in. If you see intergender match, you know immediately you're not in the PG era at all. You are 2008 and older immediately. William Regal defeated Hardcore Holly in a singles match for the WWF European Championship in 5 minutes. Boy, William Regal, and that's maybe a guy I'll do a nostalgia on too. William Regal, one of the most underrated heels of all time. When I look back and go, damn, he was good. Really, really good. So I may end up doing a wrestling nostalgia on William Regal. Some of you may find that boring. Oh, it's William Regal. It's not a top star. No, I really believe that it is somebody that I need to touch on because I don't think he gets the appreciation he deserves for how good he is as a heel. And he belongs as a heel, period. So, Val Venus with Ivory defeated China. Chris Jericho defeated Kane in a Last Man Standing match. Edge and Christian defeated the Dudley Boys. K-Quick, yes. Now known as R-Truth. And Road Dogg and Right to Censor. Wow. Remember Right to Censor? With Stevie Richards, Bill Buchanan, and the Good Father. Oh, yeah. I remember that one. Chris Benoit, defeated Billy Gunn by submission for the WWF Intercontinental Championship. Ivory defeated Molly Holly and Trish Stratus for the WWF Women's Championship in 2 minutes. 2 minutes. Boy, the women have come a long way, haven't they? And then, I'm not going to spoil it, but the final main event, I'm not going to give it away, but just in case you haven't seen it, I won't tell you the ending. I'll let you listen to it as time goes on here, but it went 32 minutes and 7 seconds, and that was for the WWF Championship. So, on a side note, because I'm going to get to some audio, because I want you to listen to the promo for this match. Very good, and it gets you hyped up, and I know you can't see it, but you can hear it. The one thing I want to talk about quick is Vince McMahon calling the matchup that's inevitable to happen of Roman Reigns versus Drew McIntyre as Hogan Flair. He thinks it's going to be as big as Hogan Flair, and he's looking at it as such. Are you kidding me? Really? So when you look at the analogy here, he's probably looking at Roman Reigns as Hulk Hogan, and he's looking at Drew McIntyre's Ric Flair. Is that the analogy? I mean, you cannot do this, Vince. That tells you the state of mind, or that tells you that, like, that his mind and the way he perceives people that he's pushing is in no way in alignment with the fans at times. At times. He's not completely senile, okay? I mean, it's very easy to jump on that bandwagon. I don't think he is. But certain things, you have to be kidding me if he's comparing Hogan Flair to a down-the-line match of Roman Reigns versus Drew McIntyre. No doubt. Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre are going to kill it, and they're going to have a great rivalry. I can't wait for it. It's inevitable. Yes, they're on separate brands, but that's what makes it great when they finally come to crash with one another. That, I hope they keep the sanctity of that, of the brand split for at least that match. But it's no way going to be Hogan Flair. Hogan... is, you know, beside all of his racist comments and all the negative publicity he's gotten, all that aside, professionally, this man is the biggest name in pro wrestling history. Bigger than Stone Cold Steve Austin in terms of name household value, like name brand value in a home, like household value. That's why they call it that, because most people in homes in the United States know who Hulk Hogan is, even if you don't know. Worldwide, too. Even if you don't know or hate wrestling, you're like, oh, didn't he do that wrestling thing, Hogan? Yeah. Yes. So, you cannot tell me Roman Reigns has that same name brand value. The household name. You can't tell me that. Come on, Vince. Same with Ric Flair, one of the greatest, if not the greatest of all time, to step in the ring ever. Let's take a step or five back here. Good God. I like the ambition. It's not even an attainable goal, nor should it be. Okay, let's, guys, listen to this promo. Now, this promo is a couple of minutes long, and I know that you can't see it, which is a shame, but it still gives you an idea. And just listen to the music. I mean, I love this dramatic music. It's just great, great stuff. So let's listen to it, and we'll talk about it.
I don't like a lot of these guys in the Hell in a Cell match. It's a lousy investment, you going in there. I want to protect my investment, all right?
No! Oh!
So we'll take a pause there. And again, I really wish you could have seen it. It's such an old school promo, isn't it? I think they used that song. I did find it at one point. It's by Paul Orndorff. That's a wrestler. It's from some opera, right? That is a very overused but really good wrestling dramatic background music to use when promoting, especially a match of this caliber. We've heard it. If you haven't heard that, I mean, I don't know where you've been, because it's used not just in wrestling, but all over the place. It's one of the most famous songs of all time. So it is definitely warranted here. And just anytime I hear that, it reminds me of just the Attitude Era, tenfold. So the whole premise behind this was that Vince McMahon didn't want this match to even happen. Vince McMahon didn't want this match to happen because it was a bad investment on his part. He was putting his biggest assets together in an extremely dangerous match. Understandable. Understandable that he's putting them all in the ring at once. Huge liability for the company. Understandable. I mean, there's some plot holes there. There's some definite things I could poke at that. But the star power here is absolutely insane. I mean, it's crazy that we took this for granted, too, back then. But Mick Foley also, who was the commissioner at the time, offered himself up to say that if anybody gets injured in this match, that I will step down as commissioner. Well, you just said in the promo that you expect people's careers to be ended. So it makes no sense. See, this is my 35-year-old mind versus my 15-year-old mind at the time. Where I just kind of glossed over these things and just didn't really care about the logic, where I look at it now 20 years later, I'm like, wait, what? That shouldn't have been a stipulation Mick Foley put on himself. It should have been a stipulation that Vince McMahon put on Mick Foley, saying if anyone gets injured, anyone is out of action for a long period of time because of this match, this is on you, and you are stepping down as commissioner. You're fired. But nonetheless. Okay, so the match gets underway. And inexplicably, I'll say the word right, they have a dump truck of sorts that has a whole bunch of like sawdust or something, wood chips and sawdust in there, that somehow they backed up to the ring. Well, who the hell's backing that up to the ring for any reason other than to have someone go off it? It was just a setup stunt that I wasn't a fan of because it was clearly set up. There's never a reason for anyone to ever have that truck there. Never. Never. But we all saw the bump. If you haven't seen the bump, it's enjoyable, predictable, safe, right? But there were high standards on this match, insanely high standards on this match because of, well, think about prior Hell in a Cell matches. Mick Foley was retired by Triple H at Hell in a Cell, not too soon before this match. And Mick Foley also, the most famous Hell in a Cell match of all time with Undertaker a couple of years earlier, got thrown off the top of the cell in the most famous call ever by Jim Ross and the most famous match ever of Hell in a Cell. So this one had a crazy standard that it almost couldn't live up to because people aren't going to throw each other off the top of the cell. I mean, it's just stupid. It's unsafe. I would not warrant it. But somebody needed to do something, and that was the safest bump that can happen. But we'll get to that in a minute. But let's listen to a little bit more audio here from the match, and then we'll get to the big spot and then the conclusion here. So we got everyone pretty much hitting their finishers here in a really cool spot. I mean, everyone seemed to get that false finish. That's always a fun thing to do when it's done correctly. You know, with the choke slam and the stunner and the rock bot, all of it. I mean, it's just it's good stuff when and that happens. And boy, the crowd reactions back then. Damn. I mean, it's goosebumping, and especially the fact that we don't have fans right now. It makes it that much better, I think. That we haven't had fans in 8 months, and now we see not only fans in person, of course, 20 years ago, but you also have some of the loudest reactions of all time. It's really cool to see and bring you back here. So, you know, don't forget, Kurt Angle came in as the WWF champion. I probably should have mentioned that. Kurt Angle came in as the WWF champion. So let's get to the big spot and then close out the match. God. Okay, so we'll take a quick pause there. And hey, I did get my question answered. I thought I remembered that spot. I apparently just only remembered the truck just being there from the beginning of the match. It wasn't. I don't know why I thought it was. Vince McMahon actually hired a construction truck that was apparently just holding wood chips, right? I mean, whatever. It is what it is. He tried to have the cell torn down so that this match couldn't continue. He was trying to save his assets. And then Mick Foley had Vince escorted out by security. And the really cool moment after this was Stone Cold and The Rock never really crossed paths prior to this match. Like, they haven't had a true confrontation. Even during the match, they really stayed their separate ways and were involved with other competitors in the match. And they finally, at the end of the match, lock eyes, both bloody and battered on the opposite sides of the ring. It was a really, really cool moment. and they come face to face. And, well, here's what happened. So these two lock eyes, and it was a precursor to what would happen at WrestleMania, right? Because this is December 2000, and then we had The Rock and Austin meet at WrestleMania 17 at on April 1st, 2001. So this was a precursor for what was to come between these two challenging for the WWF Championship. The Rock went on to beat Kurt Angle at No Way Out and then face Stone Cold Steve Austin, who won the Royal Rumble that following year in 2001, a few months or a month later, and have him challenge The Rock for the championship at WrestleMania in Houston, regarded as one of the best WrestleManias of all time in Houston, Texas that night. And I would concur with that. It was amazing. So let's get to, though, the conclusion of this match. So Austin hits the stunner on The Rock at the end of the match, and he couldn't capitalize, or he tried to capitalize, and Triple H intervened, which allowed Kurt Angle to just basically drape his arm over the chest of The Rock and get the three count. So again, these two would go on to have a program where The Rock would eventually capture the championship, and then we get an Austin Rock main event for WrestleMania. But boy, oh boy, this was a hell of a match, and how violent it was. Holy, you know what? I mean, it was violent compared to today's standards, and I'm not advocating for going back to blood and guts just for the fact of just going back to blood and guts, but damn, you can't tell me that a little blood inside Hell in a Cell isn't drama in and of itself when it's warranted. I mean, I do miss sometimes that brutality. I miss the blood once in a while, but hey, WWE's painted the cell red, so that's just good enough for me, right? Yeah, I'm being very facetious. So, but I actually don't like the painted red cell. I do like the traditional steel cell. Otherwise, it kind of looks like a toy. I mean, it looks like something they're trying to market to you. Just leave it alone. It's fine as it is, unless that paint is also a protective coating from any sharp edges or things that may happen to the talent during the match. Which in which case, fine, but I don't think so. I mean, you could really I think, do without that red tint on the cell. It's so gimmicky. But boy, oh boy, if you haven't seen this match, go back and watch it on the network. Go back and watch it on YouTube, wherever you can get it. It's the Armageddon 2000 six-man Hell in a Cell match. It will take you back in time, 20 years. So, alrighty, well, that concludes our voicemail / wrestling nostalgia segment for the week. And tomorrow will be a special episode from Zach Smith. It won't be your typical review, but he has a special podcast for you guys tomorrow. If you are interested in covering AEW and you have previous audio experience, please let me know. I have a couple of people interested, but I don't have anyone who has a passion for AEW that has been watching for a long time. I'm looking for somebody who has been really paying attention to the AEW product since its inception. Somebody that has got audio, at least, a high quality mic and minimal audio experience is fine. That'll probably suffice. But if you're interested in covering AEW for the show, let me know at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. And we can discuss further. But until then, guys, we've got a ton of stuff coming up beyond that. Of course, we've got the preview and prediction show on Saturday night with the co-host. And then we have the Sunday pay-per-view immediately following the we'll have the our review show immediately following the pay-per-view on Sunday night. So we've got a ton of audio coming your way for Hell in a Cell. Hope everyone enjoyed this show and enjoys the rest of your day. Until then, I'll talk to you soon.